Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome to the 182nd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Lior Shemesh and Luke Good. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Oren Kaplan, and today we have Lily Marié on the show. She is an actress. You might recognize her from the 127 episodes of ER, 15 seasons that she was on as an actress, and many other shows, by the way. She has a lot of credits on IMDb. But she is also quite the distinguished director.
She is tearing it up right now.
We had a very hard time scheduling her because she's shooting How to Get Away with Murder. She just finished shooting NCIS LA. Before that, she did 2 episodes of MacGyver. She just did Terror for AMC. She's kind of unstoppable.
Yeah.
And she tells us the entire story of how she got to direct all this stuff. And it literally started many, many years ago when she was shadowing the directors on ER.
Yeah, she's such a class act, so funny, so nice, so gracious. You get immediately why people want to spend time with her.
And I think we learned a lot about like shadowing. She had some really interesting tips on who the person that you should contact in terms of shadowing. And it sounds like both you and I in our shadowing experience have been doing it all wrong.
Bro, we chunked it. Yeah, this conversation with Lily reminded me of 2 other obvious episodes. Our episode with Maggie Kiley and then our episode with Hannah Lee Culpepper. 2 other awesome directors who've been tearing it up, doing a ton of episodic television. Hannah Lee's got the new Picard show. Maggie's got the new Katie Keene show on Netflix. But like all 3 of these guests, they all have a long road of shadowing and then turning that shadowing into real careers. I think all of them did like north of 20 shadowings each. So like winning a ton of awards, shadowing a ton, and then finally breaking through. So I highly recommend listening to all of those other 2 episodes in addition to the one that we have with Lily today. But I think if you listen to the 3 of those, you will be ready to shadow and break through and learn from all of the things that these awesome directors have brought to the table for us.
Yeah. It's a really good interview, and she's a really gracious person. After the interview, she's like, hey, if you guys ever need help, let me know. And I was like, cool, can we shadow you? She was like, nope.
She was like, hard no.
Pass, thank you.
But you can listen to an episode of a podcast I just recorded. But yeah. No, she really is such a treat. So before we jump into our interview with Lily, we did have a listener question we wanted to jump into.
Well, we actually have a voicemail today from Andrew Klekzek. Let's listen to it.
Hey guys, I have been working as a filmmaker for 5 years, but my question is, when you hit transition periods between big jobs, I'd really love to supplement commercial work, branded documentary work. I'm just wondering how to get more of that. A lot of work that I've done also is of like a religious nature. Part of me wonders if it just turns people off. And then the second part of that question is, how do I get what I have in front of somebody, make them want to hire me, or is it just that getting it in front of a lot of people? Pretty much it. Thanks a lot.
Cool. Andrew, thank you so much. I appreciate you Dialing in, as we all know, I love those voicemails. So I think I'm hearing three questions. One, how do I know if my stuff's good?
Right.
The second one, I think, is like, will people judge it for it being religious? And then the third is, how do I get more work? Right?
Yeah.
So often I'll just send you a spot and be like, hey, do you think this is good enough? And you'd be like, no, that's why you sent it to me.
I mean, unfortunately, the answer usually is no.
And sometimes it's yes. Sometimes yeah. It's yes. And it's like, hey, dude, don't be so stupid.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't mean with your stuff. I mean, when you're asking that question.
But I think with any person, I think it's like, if you have to ask, that could be an indicator. But also when you have a person that you trust to give you an honest answer, then, you know, trust them.
Right. But don't you think kind of a very good litmus test is, hey, I'm going to cut a reel. Here's like 5 commercials I directed. Here they are back to back. I'm going to send it to production companies and say, hey, I'm, you know, looking to be put on a roster somewhere to get commercial work. And if every single one of them is like, doesn't respond or says no thanks, then it's not good enough.
No, because I feel like that's not a bad indicator necessarily, but it's also not a great one, because I think, like in any business, having a personal relationship or a personal introduction is a different deal. If you were like, hey, you know, I met this guy at, you know, the entertainment in Tallahassee drinks every, you know, the last couple third Saturdays of the month or whatever, we've got a good rapport and I'm going to ask him straight up, and he says no, that's a thing to think about. Definitely. But like cold calling people and all that stuff, it's just too easy to just archive that email and not worry about it, to think of it as a true indicator of whether or not your work is good.
Right. Yeah. Look, good is obviously super subjective. But if by good you mean it's a type of work that's going to get me more work, then, you know, you show it to people that would potentially hire you to do similar stuff. So Andrew specifically, he like sent us his website, which is really cool. And he has a lot of really great looking spots on it. I kind of feel like his best stuff feels a little more docu style. Mm-hmm. So if I were him and I was trying to get more work, I would try to find people that are doing docu style
more doc stuff
commercials. Yeah. In my market and show them his stuff. I think stuff that helps you stand out is like winning awards, going to festivals, being a Vimeo staff pick.
And also just straight up cultivating relationships. So, you know, maybe that's a thing of, you know, networking is a dirty word, I guess, but like getting to know people who work at these different companies. Going back just a tiny bit, I think, Oren, I think that sometimes you and I forget what it was like earlier in our careers where we didn't have as many spots as we liked. Like saying like, oh, I just string together 5 commercials that I've done and you know, send them around. But that kind of presumes that you have 5 spots that you are confident in enough to send around. And so I think that's maybe the other thing that we're dealing with, Andrew. And I think it kind of ties into the religious affiliation question as well. Number 2 is just like just adding a little bit more diversity to your body of work, I think, might give you a little bit more confidence in knowing like, oh, I really like this one and I don't like that one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I guess I feel like when we hear a question like this, specifically Andrew's question, am I at that place where I can get a production company to represent me? It's like that story I told about A Band Apart. You know, my first meeting, I was 1,000,000% not ready to have that meeting, but I got lucky through a relationship and they showed me, hey, look, these are the people you're up against. They're making insanely amazing things. They're making 30-second spots that look like 30-second spots, which, by the way, my note to Andrew would be like, if you want to do 30-second commercials, then put 30-second commercials mm-hmm. on your website. You have like a bunch of commercials that are like a minute and a half that could easily cut down to 30. If you want to do these kind of more of the branded content, minute and a half type thing, a lot of that does come from relationships. If you, you know, have friends that are working on a small business and you mm-hmm. kind of offer them, hey, you know, for $10,000, let's put together a plan and shoot like some branded content for you, whether it's comedy or docu-style or
lifestyle. Yeah, I mean, the docu-style stuff is so nice too, because you can make something look appropriate without spending a ton of money. You know, I feel confident, Andrew, that you can pull together a couple awesome looking interviews and then some slice of life pieces that you can kind of intercut in between, and then you can put together some pretty great looking BTS style, interview style, docu-style spots.
Yeah. From a technical standpoint, I think Andrew has all he needs. You know, I think anyone looking at his work is like, oh yeah, this guy knows how to shoot stuff.
Yeah.
I think really more the kind of other parts of directing are the things that you'll have to prove yourself. Do you have a variety in styles? You know, can you cast people that look like they would be in a commercial that's on TV? Can you get performances like that? Are you being efficient in your storytelling? Basically make stuff that looks like top tier and you can get those top tier jobs. I think the question about the religious thing, like I'll just be like 100,000,000% blunt and honest. I do think if I saw a website and all the work was like for my church or something, I would be like, oh, this is the like Little League. Mm-hmm. Like I do think even, you know, we have a friend that used to edit all like the trailers for all the Christian movies and they were making millions and millions of dollars. Like these are giant business. It's probably getting a lot more views than anything you or I made. But I do think like traditional advertising people and Hollywood people look at that stuff and go like, oh, it's niche religious stuff. It's not at the level of the mainstream stuff that we're making. And it's totally not true, but I do think there is a bias that exists there.
I think that a bias like that is going to be person to person. But what I think is more universal is that anytime you've got a single client, it looks like, oh, this is the one relationship they have. And then all of a sudden it's called into question. Well, can they work with other teams? And, you know, how, like, that's what makes it feel narrow to me. You know what I mean? Like if you went onto my website and like I'd only done things for College Humor and it was all just College Humor, College Humor, College Humor, I think it would be within your, you know, right mind to be a little apprehensive.
Right. I will say everything that we've said, I'm on his site right now, directedbyandrew.com. Great URL, by the way. You guys should all check it out. I don't feel like it comes off as like a very religious body of work.
Yeah.
So yeah. I honestly don't think it's a problem that you have. I think all this stuff looks great. And it would not hurt if you spent some time like educating yourself on like how ad agencies work and commercial production companies work.
Well, I think you'd say, well, bro, I'm listening to your podcast.
Well, yeah, that I do think that's like a great step. You know, but I guess a director would not have a relationship with an agency traditionally. They would have a relationship with a production company. And so I think where you are, I believe he's in Illinois, you should basically just try to make relationships with those production companies and work on their things and see if they have things and show them your work. So just keep it up. I think, Andrew, you're doing all the right things.
Andrew, I would say maybe because you have so much awesome doc style stuff, I think that it might not be a bad idea to do a cool lifestyle doc sort of piece on maybe a local business or just something that kind of is in that realm. Something that looks really slick and is like slice of life and with, you know, interesting looking people who are really telegenic and magnetic and charismatic.
And challenge yourself to make it 30 seconds. There, watch any Apple commercial. Check out Lance Accord.
Sure, there you go.
His work is like insanely good. I think the problem with a lot of newer filmmakers, especially ones that are trying to get into commercial and branded and that are a little one-man bandish, they feel like it's about the beautiful shots, you know? Mm-hmm. And that isn't really... A lot of people can get beautiful shots. The real trick is, can you get them in 23 seconds and have an end card and have it all add up to something unique and meaningful and memorable? And so that's why I'm saying to check out these other examples of the people that have nailed it,
sure,
and know that you can do it in 30 seconds. So
all of which I think is great advice. And also I think it will round out your site a little bit more. And I think that'll be kind of helpful. Basically, I think that solves a few problems. And I think you can do a piece here or there that's just like a weekend. And it seems like you probably own your own camera, or maybe you can just borrow one. You have access to gear. Like, it doesn't break the bank, basically. So I don't think it's a huge ask. And I think it'll help with the whole thing a little bit more. It's not a silver bullet. But the good news is that because you already have a solid body of work, I think it's just adding to that pile a little bit more.
Right. I almost think you could do a lot of what I'm saying with the footage you have already. And my other big note, avoid anything that seems cliche or tropey or like sentimental. Like, just really try to own things and not copy things that you've seen done in other commercials. I know it's like a really vague piece of advice. And anyhow, hopefully that was helpful.
Yeah. Thanks so much, everyone. If you want to drop us a voicemail, give us a ring at 2626-SHOOT-1.
We'd love to hear from you, or email us at justshootapod@gmail.com. And we will happily give you our thoughts in front of thousands of people. Anyhow, we really appreciate you, Andrew. And your stuff is awesome. Check out directedbyandrew.com. That's a pretty amazing URL to own, right?
Yeah. Boom. Thanks, Andrew.
Okay, let's mention our Patreon real quick. It's patreon.com/justshootapod. It is a place you can go to support the podcast if you, like Andrew, feel like you get something from it. patreon.com/justshootapod. If you give us $10 a month, you'll get a free hat that says Just Shoot It on it, which hopefully will remind you every morning when you see it on your hat rack that you should go be shooting
it. You should go be shooting it. The money goes towards things like our new editors, Sarah and Jonathan, or our live show. We've got a live show coming up in Los Angeles, October 20th. We're talking genre directors. It's our Halloween episode. So if you're into horror movies or sci-fi movies or thrillers, or just straight up independent movies, or hanging out with other filmmakers, and you are a patron to our Patreon, you get in for free. Otherwise, you can go to justshootapod.com/live and get your ticket.
Enough plugging. We are going to talk to a very awesome filmmaker. Here's Lily Marié. Hey, we are with Zach Lipovsky of Shotlister. He's going to tell us real quick what makes Shotlister an awesome tool to have as a director. So one of the things Shotlister helps people with is not just being on set and keeping track of their shots, but also preparing for the shoot. Can you tell us how Shotlister actually helps you before the shoot?
I mean, basically the way Shotlister works is, you know, you build your shot list, but then the real key of it is you add how long you think each shot is going to take and each thing that you have to do is going to take. And if you're terrible at math, we got you covered, because the app adds up all those little estimates of how long everything's going to take. And say you've got a 12-hour day that you've got to get it all done in. If you add in everything you want to do with your estimates, and at the end, the app will glow red if you go over those 12 hours in your prep. I was working on a movie. I remember I was working. It was late in the shoot. I was on the weekend, like, building the shot list for the next week. And I added up everything that we had to do, and it was like 18 hours worth of work. I was like, oh no, this is impossible. And then I like trimmed out everything that was like just floofy, you know, arrogant director shots, and just went down to like the bare essentials of what we needed. And it was still 16 hours worth of work. And so I called the producers and told them, guys, I've done the math. There's no way this day is shootable. I know we have two cameras, but if we had a third camera crew, we could do it, because I had tried on Shotlister. And they hemmed and hawed because they didn't want to pay for it. Eventually they said, okay, we'll give you the third camera. And we made that day in 12 hours. And it was so much better to have found that out 2 days earlier on the weekend at the coffee shop than on the set realizing, oh no, we're only going to get half of this action scene. So it was really, really powerful being able to kind of not only build your shot list, but estimate how long it's going to take to actually do.
Maybe you get to, you know, trim things down a little bit so that eventually you can get floofy with it.
Well, often what I do is, like, I'll put shots in there that I put zero time for, but I just, and put little stars next to them, and they're basically just like targets of opportunity, little fun things I think would be great to get, but only if we're doing really well.
And is it true that you guys are still giving Just Shoot It listeners a free copy of the app?
It has been going so well. We've had so many people email in, and we've been sending out so many free copies out the door. We're crazy. We're crazy over at Shotlister. It's been having a great response from people getting their free copies. So all they got to do is email justshootitpod@shotlister.com. Get your copy free right now.
And remember, when you email Shotlister, to let them know if you want the iOS, Android, or macOS version, and you will get a free copy.
Matt Noren discount.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks so much, Zach. We are excited for people to see the app. Hey, we are here with Lily Marié.
Hey, hi, good morning, good afternoon.
Good morning. Thanks for squeezing us in. You're like the busiest person in show business.
Oh, am I? That,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
George Clooney wanted this spot, but he had like more availability. So we bumped him for you.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to be here, guys.
Yeah. Well, Lily, let's actually, let's start at the end, because part of the challenge of scheduling with you is that you're literally shooting, is it 6 different shows right now?
Yes.
That's so good. So tell us all that you basically, you know, you're a Knight of Shondaland yourself, right?
Like, oh my gosh.
What shows are you directing right now?
Well, let's see. First of all, tonight, my episode of The Terror on AMC airs. So I've been doing lots of promo for that.
And is that a horror show?
I haven't seen it. It's, I guess it's labeled that genre of its horror, but I like to think of this season as more like in the vein of A Quiet Place or The Sixth Sense,
cool.
rather than like people coming out of closets with chainsaws. And,
sure,
you
sure.
know, it's a little more suspenseful than horror,
like high concept.
Yeah,
thriller.
I guess so. And the terror is this is the second season, so it's an anthology. The first season was about a British ship in the 1800s that got lost in the Antarctic. It was based on a true story. They were sort of exploring the Antarctic, and suddenly they lost contact with them. And in fact, recently they found the ship. It's called it's called the Terror.
Wait, the real ship?
I didn't realize
the real ship.
Oh, cool.
And they, because it had been preserved in the ice and everything, they found like papers and, you know,
like all with this writing
stuff
and stuff.
Yeah, all this stuff in the captain's cabin. Anyway, so they told this story of this horrible story of the ship sinks and then all the crew are stranded in the Antarctic. But on top of that, they put a horror story, a ghost, or
like
something.
A supernatural.
Yes, thing. Exactly.
And so your season, though,
our season
is a totally different story.
It's a totally different story with different producers and writers and directors and actors. It's set in Southern California during World War II, so it follows Japanese Americans through from the start of World War II and the internment and the end of the war. And it specifically follows one young man. But on top of this, there's a horror element, which at first I thought, how's that going to work? But I think they did it in a really smart way, because there were lots of first-generation Japanese there. And, you know, any first-generation immigrant brings with them folklore from their country. And so they brought this folklore of ghosts, and they just sort of, that was sort of their part of their lives, that they believed these ghost stories and that ghosts existed. And of course, their kids, the Americans, were like, we don't believe in that, you know, that's not real. We're Americans. And so at first, when there's evidence of like mysterious ghostly things happening, all the Americans say, you know, that's all the Issei, the first generation, are like, oh, that's ghosts. And all the Nisei, the second generation, are like, that doesn't exist. And then eventually they come to believe when they see more evidence that it's there. So it actually works. And I was surprised. When I first heard about this show was like last summer, and or maybe even before then, I just read a blurb in Deadline and saw that it was going to be about Japanese Americans and during World War II. And I chased everybody around. I chased AMC. I chased Scott Free, Ridley Scott's company. I chased Alex Wu, who's the showrunner, to hire me to direct this, because my mother's family were all interned in California in a Japanese American internment camp.
Can I ask you a question, actually?
Sure.
Before we get into the five other shows that you're making. But I feel like I've heard people say things like, oh, I chased them down. I really wanted to be a part of it. Tell us, what did you literally do? Did you just call your agent and say, hey, get me on this show?
I read this article and I thought, how do I get in on this? Because this is perfect for me. Mm-hmm. It just so happened that like a couple of days later, I got an email from Shannon Goss Schwartz, who is a writer on the show, who I've known since the days of ER. She was a writer's assistant, and I was an actor then. And
that, I just want to point that out. That is so incredible, though. Do you know what I mean? Because I think you hear stories of like, oh, you know, those relationships, they'll bear fruit, like being nice to people and being staying in touch with people.
Sort of being yourself, you know, you can't push these relationships. You have to act like a normal person. You know, you can't sort of.
But also that idea of like being nice to the assistants, right?
Yeah, sure.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, on ER, it was sort of like being in the trenches together. We were all working on the show really super hard. And so we all just made friends. And there wasn't like this delineation of, here are the actors and mm-hmm. there's the assistants. You know, mm-hmm. it was like we were all doing this together mm-hmm. and no one's job was more important than anyone else's at a certain point.
So awesome to hear, though. It's really wonderful, you know, like because I think, again, people hear those stories all the time. And this is just such like clear evidence of things working out for everyone.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And I do have to say that just about every assistant on ER is now producing and writing mm-hmm. and doing great things on their own. So you can't do it with this sort of calculated thought of, I have to be friends with the assistant because God knows where that person's
right,
going to go.
Sure.
You know, you just have to have that attitude towards everybody mm-hmm. that, you know, look, we're all doing this together. We're all trying to get this done. And if you have, you know, if you have a connection with people, you can't get to the point where you're like, oh, I'm the filmmaker and you're the lowly assistant.
Sure, sure.
It has to be, you know, all your relationships have to sort of stem from wanting to connect and mm-hmm. wanting to be collaborative. And really, I mean, isn't that why we're all doing this? Because we enjoy collaborating.
Yeah. Well, and you're getting a huge paycheck for this podcast, too. So, that's like a...
Thank God.
Yeah.
So anyway, reach out to your old friend.
So I reach... she reached out to me. She writes me this email. She goes, hey, I'm working on this show called The Terror. I'd love for you to try to direct. And she said, go see if you can get a meeting with AMC. And this is the person you should meet with.
I see.
So,
someone in development or production?
It was the executive that was working on our show.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So, so I told my agent that I really want to get on this show and that Shannon had suggested I go and meet with this particular executive.
So that's real firepower. That's like...
Right. Yes. You can then just say to the executive, hey, Shannon from your show suggested that you meet Lily.
Exactly. And so I go and meet with that person. And then it turns out that Scott Free is also involved. So I knew David Zucker because he was and the Warner Brothers executive on ER 100 mm-hmm. years ago.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't reach out to him directly until I had an appointment with the executive who was overseeing our production. Because I didn't want to reach out until I knew that I was going to be meeting there. Mm-hmm. Once I met at AMC, I was like, so I should go meet over at Scott Free. And they were like, yes, and go meet this person. And then I emailed David and said, hey, I'm coming to meet Jordan. And he goes, yes, I know. And I'm really looking forward to it. So, I mean, that's something I learned early on in my directing career. If you don't meet all the entities involved with any production that you're trying to get on, mm-hmm. any one of those people can say, oh, I don't know Lily. And nix
you.
That's that. So I learned from a girlfriend of mine who's a very successful director now. You know, she told me the story of what happened to her, and that's exactly what happened to her. She was trying to get her first gig as a director on a TV show, and everybody wanted her, the showrunner, the directing producer, everybody, the network, the one of the studios, so she thought she was in like Flynn. Mm-hmm. And then she didn't realize there was one other production company involved. And they were like, you know, we don't know her, so no, we don't want to hire her. And so she was like, and she called everyone and said, please put in a good word for me. And they did. And then it all worked out.
Oh, good.
But, you know, that just taught me this lesson mm-hmm. of anytime I sort of see something I want, I make sure I know who all the entities are and then make sure I get a meeting.
That is such great advice and something we've been doing this show for 180 episodes. We haven't heard that piece of advice.
Yeah, I actually wish I knew that advice earlier.
Yeah, because I think it's easy to be like, oh, well, I know one major player and they'll vouch for me, right? But, you know, there's a list, you know, it's probably 10, 15 names long. And yes. It's like, okay, well, all right, not Lily. Who's next? And right. It's that simple, right?
Right. Like they sit around a table like we are right now and they put this list in the middle and then everybody goes, all right, so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And then they go, and I say yes, and you say yes, and then you say, you know, I don't know her. And then they go, okay, and they scratch her
and
out.
And then next. Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
It's like right. casting.
Yes.
Right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
I had a meeting on a movie last year, 2 years ago, where it was this like amazing meeting with this production company, and I did a treatment, and I think they really liked me, and we really hit it off, and I feel like I was very much in the running. And then in the end, the other production company that was they were working with was had like someone that they really felt strongly about that they both liked. So they ended up
right.
going with that person. And I guess I should have told my manager at the time, hey, you know, this
get
is
me a meeting
another,
over at the other
yeah.
production
company. Yeah, let's which grab it a didn't coffee. Even yeah. like. And it seems such an easy meeting to get because you're like, hey, yes. Oren just met with these right. producers. Why don't you guys meet with them too?
And know? They would have been like, oh, yeah, sure.
Sure.
We'd love to. I mean, I've never had, when I'm trying to, when I'm pursuing something, I've never had a production entity go, oh, no, we don't want to meet with her. They're always like,
sure.
because they, yeah. you know, I mean, it's like,
that's their job. Right.
Right. And when yeah. it's like when I'm casting an actor, you know, I want that actor to come in and blow me away. I want you to come in and knock it out of the park so that I go, okay, great. Next.
Yeah. yeah.
That's what I want. And so when you're contacting these production companies, they're not going to be like, oh, no, I don't know Oren. I'm not going to be with him. They're going to be like, oh, well, we don't know him. Let's bring him in. Because what if he brings us the next great idea?
Yeah, because they want it to be an easy yes, like you're saying,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So smart.
Well, actually, I'm curious. We've had a few actor turned, you know, directors on recently, but we haven't asked any of them about casting. I'm curious, like when you're auditioning actors, since you were an actor for a long time, do you think that changes the way you judge them?
Absolutely. I think the first few times I was in casting, I didn't realize. I mean, I knew I was nervous when I went into audition, mm-hmm. but I didn't realize everybody else was nervous too.
Sure.
On the other side of the camera.
No, on the actors coming in.
Oh, you didn't realize other actors would be yes. nervous also? Oh, interesting.
I always thought it was just me. And then everybody else went in like, hey, I'm like, hey. Great. Yeah, I'm yeah. not nervous at all. I just thought it was me. And I was amazed that everybody was nervous. And so when I first started auditioning actors as a director, I would start, you know, empathizing with them and not be able to see what they were doing. Cause I would just be like, oh my God, that guy's so nervous.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
And you're then, just like there making eye contact, nodding.
I'm
like,
here for you, pal.
Shooting him vibes. Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
You're like, I get it. It's okay. It's okay. You're fine.
Do you want a drink of water? You're okay.
And they're like,
why don't you do it 10 great. More times?
Yeah. 10 more times. Yeah.
Right. So then I was like, okay, wait a minute. Everybody's nervous every time they come in. And so I just taught myself how to like, not so much like ignore it, but detach from that, you know, mm-hmm. nervousness so that I wasn't empathizing so deeply and just trying to see, you know, it's sort of like the nervousness levels the playing ground because mm-hmm. everybody's nervous.
Right. I think in an audition, you're probably more vulnerable as an actor than if you book the part, right?
Yeah,
it's probably
yeah.
the most vulnerable you are because not only do you have to be in the moment and do all the acting stuff, but you're also
being, you feel like you're being judged.
Yeah. And you don't know. And you see your competition right next to you and, you know, someone might be on the phone or someone might be eating a sandwich mm-hmm. and it's like you're being judged while simultaneously being insulted and sure. being like, you know,
and
intimidated.
Also you were just in a room with like 10 other versions of yourself.
Right.
You know,
usually like so taller, right. skinnier, yeah. better looking yeah. versions of me.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
But, you know, I had an acting teacher who said to me once, look, you're going to walk in there and there's going to be somebody who's prettier and somebody who's more talented and somebody who's taller and somebody who's shorter or whatever. But you're the only person who's you. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to like not go in there like, okay, what's a banker like? It's like, no, don't come in there and give me that. Come in there and give me what am I like as a banker? because that's what's going to make me go, oh, that guy, I didn't think of it like that. So anyway, so yeah, I have to cut through the nervousness to see what they're doing. And then if I don't see you getting the beat, you know, like there's a beat here, there's a beat here, then I'll give you a note and see if you can take my direction. And here's where I think improv, having a lot of improv helps you. Because if you just come in and give me what I call last night's living room performance, it's like you're just handing me this, what my, one of my acting teachers calls a dead gift. Because you're just repeating what you did last night in your living room. And you're not true in the moment. You're not finding something. You're not being honest. I want to feel this like spark of honesty and discovery. I don't want to feel like, yeah, this is what I practiced last night. Here it is. I want to feel like you're really connected to what you're doing. So if I have you do it again, I'm going to give you notes because I want to see if you can do that. Right. I want to see if you can take the note and let go of what you did last night and bring in this new thing today. So, that's the other thing that's really important to me is that if you're reading a script and you're smart enough to see all the beats that you need, like the emotional shifts or the moments where I see you thinking about something that's in the script. That's what it comes down to when I'm casting. Did he or she get the moments? And some of my notes just say didn't get the moments, because you can't just like look at your lines. Okay, this is what I'm saying and this is what I'm doing. It's like read the script, read what the actions say, read what the other characters are saying, think about what you as a human would bring to this in terms of emotional transitions.
Yeah.
And this is like when you're obviously a new actor auditioning for a role. Because I think obviously you were on 127 episodes of ER.
Yes.
I imagine by episode five, the writers are shifting their writing to you as opposed to they're trying to catch your moments as opposed to you needing to like decipher their moments.
Right. And, or both, they'll give you little moments to play that they know you can do.
Yeah. I mean, that's how special to be on a show for that long and to have like that many episodes, right? Like back in the day, like those seasons were big orders, right? So people had time to grow and understand each other and write to each other's strengths, but also challenge them.
You know, when I first started, I would get really nervous. Oh my God, what are the producers thinking? But I really have to focus on what one of my mentors said to me a long time ago. Leslie Linka Glatter, who's the EP on Homeland, directed many episodes and won Emmys and very successful, really great director. She said to me, you really just, the film has to be the most important thing. So people don't have to like you. People don't have to be impressed by you. People don't, you don't have to worry about what people are thinking. You really just want to focus on getting what you need so you can make the best film you possibly can. And, when I first started trying to direct actors in an audition situation, it was a little nerve-wracking. But then at a certain point, I just had to say, okay, you know what? I need to see if this person is right, and I need to give them notes. And if I have to give the 30th person the exact same note for the one line, so be it. Sorry if the producers are getting bored from sitting here waiting for me to do this. But what's most important is getting the right person so that when I'm on the set, I don't have to do this, that this person either came in like that or understood me from the audition and knows what I want.
Right. Yeah. So you've kind of shed the nervousness of being judged by the producers.
Because Lily's a pro is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't mean I don't get, you know, I do get nervous going in there.
Yeah.
What, especially on a new show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or even on an old show, like, you know, a show that I've been on for a few episodes. I feel like, I think the nerves are, and I was just talking to a friend of mine on the way over here. Judi Dench calls it her batteries when you start getting nervous like that. And I think,
I love that.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just adrenaline. It's your adrenaline, and you can choose to label it how you want. You can either choose to label it as nerves and let it bring you down, or you can choose to label it as excitement and that you're, you know, really looking forward to finding the right person for this role and that you want to make sure you are focused and see what you want and really are able to choose wisely. I mean, I think that's when I get nervous. It's like, am I choosing wisely? Okay, I just have to trust myself. So
you wrote and directed a feature film.
Yes.
And I was curious if you felt like that was something you had to do in order to get like these TV directing gigs. Only because we've had so many listeners and even maybe people that are sitting at this table right now that feel like making a feature film is some
talking
sort of
about me, Lily.
Some sort of
I figured, let's see, sure. Not me.
Yeah. Orin's already made Orin, a movie.
So yeah. Like, who leaves you? Yeah,
then it's some sort of mark of validation. But then we've had so many guests on recently that have not directed feature films that are working in TV now too.
Well, you know what? It's, you know, everybody asks me my story as if I'm gonna unlock some secret to their success.
And you are.
Yeah. I honestly think already just your tip of like talking to all the interested parties is like,
it's such a good nugget. That's like the reason
nobody,
we make this show.
Yeah. Nobody told me that. I had to figure that out myself. And I feel like that should be like the first thing people tell you.
Oh, is figure it out yourself?
No.
Oh,
Yeah, go figure it out yourself, kid.
Well, what we've talked about before is like in casting.
Sorry, where
we're talking about features. Oh, we're talking about just kind of
the feature. Yes.
So
here's what happened. So, you know, I was on ER and it was about 2 years in, and I noticed one of the other actors on his day off in street clothes with headphones sitting at Video Village watching the monitor. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "I'm shadowing." I said, "What's shadowing?" And he goes, "I'm learning how to direct." And I was like, "Well, I'm sitting here 16 hours a day. I want to do that too."
Sure.
So I went to John Wells and I said, "May I shadow on the show?"
And what season is this?
Like season
deep
three,
in?
Maybe.
Okay.
Season three.
Yeah, yeah. But so the show's a hit at this point, though,
oh,
right?
It's
like a phenomenon, season three.
It was
three.
A hit from
the pilot?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
No, I came in on episode 5, I think. So yeah, it was like season 3. And so John said, "Yeah, sure, let me figure out who I want to partner you up with." And then he came back and he said, "I've asked Leslie Linka Glatter if you can shadow her." And she said, "Yes." And we were already friends by then because she had been directing the show. And so I already knew her. So she knew I wouldn't, you know, bother her unnecessarily. And I was already part of the family. So it wasn't like I was shadowing on a new show where nobody knew who I was. I was already there almost every day. So I started shadowing Leslie, and I shadowed Leslie on like 6 episodes of ER and a few episodes of West Wing and a few episodes of Gilmore Girls. And
yeah, she's kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah. She's a huge deal. Yeah.
And you just named 3 of the best shows of all time.
Wait, and then when you're shadowing, you're with her pretty much the entire day?
Well, here's the thing. If you're shadowing as part of a program, which is how I would suggest you do it, you know, people ask if they can shadow me a lot. And my answer always is, I'm not really in a position to have you do it, but I would suggest that you don't shadow just like a friend of yours who's guest directing on a show.
Sure.
Because the production doesn't know you, and they just regard you as Lily's friend.
Right.
So they're
Your entourage, you're not
right,
like part
exactly.
of the team. Yeah.
And so, first of all, you're not going to get to come to prep, which is the most important part. And you're absolutely not going to be invited to post. So basically, you're just sitting around eating craft service all day with me.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Lily's friend. So you're not learning a lot. If you do it either as part of a program, see, I did the ABC program and the CBS program. There's also other really great programs. Sony has a great one. Warner Brothers has a terrific one.
And these are, you did those after you had done your shadowing while you were on ER.
Yes, I did those after I did my feature. Even better, if you ask a producer that you know if you can shadow on his or her show. Because then when people say, who's that guy? Oh, that's Matt. He's here because of the producer. Oh, okay.
Sure.
And so now you get access to prep. You get access to the shoot. You get access to post.
Yeah.
And you also get to come back around after you're done and go to the producer and say, hey, I had a great experience shadowing on your show. Can I come in like for 10 minutes or can we grab coffee? I just want to tell you what I experienced. And it gives you a connection. You may not get hired on that show immediately, but you start a relationship.
Right.
Right. And what do you say in those 10 minutes? You're like, I thought the shots could be a little better.
You just say, you know, I mean, for my first episode of was Nashville. And I just talked about how, yes, I agreed that the production was really big, but that, you know, there was half of it was just the drama of the show and that the other half was basically you were making music videos. And I said, the thing about it is it's not as overwhelming as I thought it would be because they've already figured out how to shoot crowd scenes. And I'm accustomed to moving a crowd around to make a small group look like a big one because you don't need to have 3,000 people. You just need to have the people that the camera sees at any given moment.
Which is how many? Like 100?
Like 100. And then you just keep moving them around. Okay, now if we're shooting you from profile, I need those 100 people to scooch over there.
Sure.
So now when
you make them all swap shirts with each other.
Everybody in the front,
yeah.
Come to
the back.
Everybody,
yeah, back
right,
back.
Exactly. Yeah. And then if you do get that one shot of the whole arena, that's CGI.
Yeah.
Right.
So I just talked to her about stuff like that, things that I saw that simplified the concert stuff for me. And that what I mainly was concerned with was the relationship between the person standing in the wings, like, you know, glaring at the other person standing on the other side of the wings, glaring at the singer on stage. And also I was a dancer and a choreographer. So to me, you know, I know what I want to see when I'm shooting a musical number, stuff like that. I just told her what I saw in the production and things that I felt helped make a production go faster.
So it was almost technical. You kind of talked about like how you would direct it in a
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Exactly. Because that's what she wanted to hear. She wanted to hear, how would you direct this? And I said, the other thing that I thought was great is that you rehearse while lighting is setting up, you rehearse the next scene, so now they're all ready to go. And then once they've lit this scene, the crew can go over there and light the next scene. I shoot this scene, then I go to the next one and I'm all ready. The actors are ready, the lighting's ready, pretty much.
So you have the actors rehearse a scene, and then while they're lighting that set, rehearse the next scene?
If I can, yes.
Even if it's totally out of order, like a scene from tomorrow in the story.
Well, if it's on in the schedule, whatever's next in the schedule.
Right.
And hopefully your first AD has set it up in a way that, you know, I mean, you can't always do that, but it's helpful if you do.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least take the lighting crew over. And like this last episode of NCIS LA, I did that as much as possible. While we're lighting one scene, we would go over to the next set and I'd say, I'm going to look this way. They're going to come out of here. I'm going to look this way so that they can sort of pre-light before we get there.
And I'm sure a producer loves hearing that you have an efficient plan, basically.
Absolutely.
But not only do you know what you're talking about, but you're going to make your day.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so smart.
So in that 10 minutes, you talk about that. And then, for example, this showrunner said, that's great. But, there can be a couple of difficult people to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just talked about, this is how I would do it, or this is what I saw, or this is how, if it's an actor, it's like, look.
Would you ever play the back on ER? Not specifically about difficult actors necessarily, but just kind of bringing up, reminding them that you have experience in a variety of ways.
Yes, yeah. I would say I understand the different mindset of an actor who's on a series as opposed to an actor on a feature. Because an actor on a series has been doing this character for a really long time.
Sure. Yeah.
And really just wants to get his or her day done so that they can go home and have dinner with their kids.
Right. That's the big advantage of doing TV. Right. Dinner with your kids.
Yeah. A feature actor, but, the thing with the series actor is that they're going to get to do this character, hopefully, many, many, many more times. A feature actor can get really precious about every moment on the set because it's only this feature and they only get to do this character once and they only get to do this scene once or anything similar to this scene.
And a feature is forever in a way that an episode of television isn't necessarily the same.
Correct.
Yeah.
You can get in deeper with the feature director, or even, for instance, on The Terror with a limited series act. Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Because they know they're only going to do this for 10 episodes,
yeah,
and then it's gone.
Yeah.
So you can dig in deeper, and you can, they want to take more time. But with the series actor, it has to be blim, blam, let's do it. All right, next scene.
Next up.
And it's not that they don't care about what they're doing. They just want to do it quickly and efficiently. And so, again, I would say, I would say yes on this, having been on a series for 15 seasons. And if they have any worries about you, they'll bring them up. So then she just said, okay, I'll, she was impressed. I just so passionately wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And that she could see I was smart and that I was capable of doing it. And so,
and you noticed the right things.
And yes, that's the other thing. Mm-hmm. I noticed the right things.
Yeah.
And
I mean, every show probably has a distinct set of challenges.
Yes.
And the showrunner knows that better than anybody.
Yes.
So they just want to know Lily sees those challenges.
Right.
And has thought through how to deal with them.
Right. Exactly. Because if I'm there for 3 weeks, if I haven't seen those challenges, then
sure,
I probably am not the right person to direct this show.
There you go. That's so.
So she wanted to make sure, she was like, yes, I figure you saw them, but did you think about how would you deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
The person you shadowed dealt with them in his or her own way,
mm-hmm,
but how would you deal with them?
So you're shadowing all the time, right? Like, you've got all of these awesome connections and all of this great insight and experience. Tell us about the first time that you decided to direct something of your own.
I got a flyer from AFI for the directing workshop for women.
Oh, well, you did DWW?
Yes,
oh,
I
great.
Did.
I didn't know that.
This is
awesome.
How I know Maggie Kelly and Amalie Culpepper.
What an incredible program.
Oh, my God.
The best, right?
It's huge. And I have to say, it changed my life. Growing up, I never saw women directors, and I never saw Asian American women directors. So it didn't even occur to me that that was something I could do. And when I got this flyer, I happened to be in an episode that Leslie was directing.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought it to work and I said, "Hey, Leslie, have you seen this? Should I do this?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah. Yeah, you should definitely do that. I'll help you get in." And then I come to find out that she had done it.
Oh, really?
A while ago.
How long? So it's been around for a while.
Oh, it's been around since 1974.
Yeah. What? The DWW?
Yep. And Jean Furstenberg started it because in the 70s, she was seeing these men just sort of going, hey, I got a show on TV. Want to do an episode? Mm-hmm. And so she was like, I don't see, first of all, there aren't a lot of women producers, if there is any. But I also, so I don't see them doing that to the women they know. And so what can I do? And she thought, all right, well, I'm running AFI. I can hand shorts out to women to direct. So at that time, they gave you a grant to direct them. And so what I didn't realize was that Leslie did it, and then her short was nominated for an Academy Award. I was like, okay, I'm not aiming toward that. I just want to see if I like directing.
That is a solid recommendation, though. Right?
Yeah. The fact that she was like, oh, yeah, I did that. I'll help you get in. Yeah. It's like, okay. So I didn't know if I was going to like directing. I mean, I thought I was going to like it, but I had no idea. And then I made my short, and it turned out that I loved it. And I was like, damn, now I'm addicted to like the most expensive drug in the world. How am I going to get some more? So all my guy friends were like, okay, so here's what you do. You make a short. You go to festivals, you win a bunch of awards, you get an agent, and you go on meetings, and then you have a directing career. I was like, right. Okay, sounds good. So I made my short. I went to a bunch of festivals. I won a bunch of awards. I got a manager. I got an agent. I started going on meetings. And then they all started to say, your short's really good. But, you know, if you had a feature we could look at, we could consider you.
And so you're a meeting on TV with TV producers.
And film. You know, just trying to do something.
But and at this point, you've shadowed a bunch already? Or no?
At this point...
You've been on 15 seasons of television.
Yeah. So. Yeah. At this point, I had probably shadowed about 15 episodes of television.
Yeah.
At that point. So I was like, all right. And then I made four more shorts.
And do you mention that in these meetings? You're like, by the way, I know how it works from every side of the camera.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But they're still like, I don't know. And they also said to me, you know, we don't think you could, like, what would it be like to go on a set and try and tell, like, 200 Teamsters what to do? And it's like, well, first of all, I don't tell the Teamsters right. what to do.
I mean, that would be intimidating for anyone.
I ask my DP, I ask my first AD, I ask all these other people.
Yeah, your department.
And
heads,
then
yeah.
they tell the Teamsters what to do. So it's like this disconnect a lot of people have of how a set works, you know. And I also said, but, you know, my dad was a Teamster. My brother was a Teamster. It's like...
I tell them what to do all the time.
I'm used to telling Teamsters what to do. Anyway, so then my manager became a producer. My agent retired. So yeah. I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to start over. And by then, ER was almost done. It was like 2009, '08. And I thought, all right, maybe I should start thinking about making a feature. And I got invited to this Asian American Independent Filmmakers Conference. And there were like 30 of us. And they had these great seminars for us and, you know, whatever, and speakers and
any cool
meetings.
People? Like Justin Lin type of speakers?
Iris Yamashita, she wrote letters from Iwo Jima for Clint Eastwood.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it was like that. It was like, oh, right. Wow. But in between, they would shove us in this room with snacks, and we would all like wait for the next seminar. And I thought, all right, I'm sitting here with these other 29 filmmakers. I'm going to go around the room and see. And they were like, they had won Academy Awards and Emmys, and they were all this very accomplished group of filmmakers. And I had made my little short, so I thought, all right, I'm going to go around the room, and I had raised like $140,000 to make my feature by that point. And I thought, well, I'm going to see how much everybody else spent on their features. So I start going around the room. They're like, oh, $100,000, $200,000. And I was like, and then they all start saying, how much did you raise? And it said 140. And they're like, Lily, you have to do it.
Just go do it. Yeah.
Just go do it. Because once you start, more people will give you money, because some people are afraid to give you money because they don't know
if you're going to do it.
Right. But once you start doing it, they're like, oh, yeah, Lily's doing it. Okay. And they were absolutely right. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. And as soon as the hour was over, I started prep for my feature. And they were right. Once they started prep, more money started coming.
And you'd written the script too, right?
I'd written the script. And I'd gone to my UPM on ER. And the first thing everybody was saying was, you have to get a budget. I was like, okay. So I go to my UPM on ER and I said, hey, Tommy, can you help me make a budget? He was like, yeah, sure. What's your budget? And I said, it's $200,000. He goes, Lily, craft service on ER for a week is $200,000. I have no idea how to do this. You're going to have to find like indie filmmakers to help you do this. So I did. So I found this huge group of people. And then I also got some people from ER who just believed in me and helped me, like costume designer from ER, asked John Wells if we could borrow some stuff from their huge bank of costumes. And they loaned us all the stuff we needed. And so I got like some of the prop people helped me. And so lots of people helped me make this film. And you know, one of the things, we just like stole things. We just drove, you just drove by and got things. And, you know, we're on the street in the middle of the night and getting stopped by cops 3 times.
And what a difference from ER, right?
Were you worried? Because I've worked with some, you know, actors that are recognizable.
Yeah.
And they're very concerned about
being
caught without permits or being caught by the police because they don't want it to be in the news, you know?
Yeah. I thought about it, but when we got stopped by the cops, they didn't seem to recognize me, so I was good. Or if they did, they pretended like they didn't know who I was.
How did you know what movie to make? Like, was it stressful? Because you raised all this money and you're going to go out on a limb and make this feature film. Like, what was the script? Like, what was it about? Was an angle there that you were, was it strategic in some way?
Yeah. I mean, I knew the story I wanted to tell. And I just wrote it without thinking about budget. And then I went back through it thinking about budget. Because you can't, you can't write from the get-go thinking about budget, because you'll stymie your imagination. Mm-hmm. So you have to just write it and then take out the scenes with the airport in it.
Right.
And the crowd of 500 or whatever.
Well, I guess you hear both kind of angles. You hear that version, which is like, just make it what it needs to be, you know, and then figure it out. Or you hear the like,
5 people in a room.
Well, the resources, like, you know, your aunt has a cabin in the woods and you know, your friend has a helicopter. Right. Like, so those, you already have 2 locations, like now start crafting the story around the resources you have.
Yes, there are many ways to do it, but I chose to do the one where you write it and then you cut things out. But luckily, I mean, there weren't a lot of things I had to cut out. So, although I did have a prison in it, which we found, it was a boys reformatory in Whittier.
Oh, wow. Oh, cool.
Which is not there anymore, but it was also in like a few movies. Like, we're like, oh wow, it was in like one movie with The Rock, and you know, it had been used as a prison many times. And then we decided, well, if we're going to have a lot of scenes there, we just started shooting in Whittier. We found a house for a location. Mm-hmm. We just, except for like things that were iconically LA, we shot most of it in Whittier.
Wow, there you go. How nice to have like a little base camp basically to build around. So smart. And maybe it's a little less competitive locations-wise than in L.A. proper, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And so you made the feature and then the TV jobs came?
Well, then I made the feature and I thought, okay, this is just going to be like my demo, my calling card for when people say, well, it'd be nice if you had a feature. I was like, okay, well, here's your feature. But I went to a bunch of festivals and won a bunch of awards, and it became something bigger than I thought it was going to be. And now it's on like 10 different online platforms. It's had like over a million views. It's taken off. And the star of it is now the star of Superstore, Nicole Bloom.
Oh, awesome.
So then I thought, all right, well, I'll use this feature to get into programs.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into the ABC program, and that's how I started shadowing on Nashville and got my first Nashville. Once I had my first episode, I was like, okay, now I'm going to start looking for an agent. And then it was a lot easier mm-hmm. to get an agent once I had an episode and had lots of meetings. And I had some meetings with the big shiny buildings in Century City.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest with you, I just really wanted someone who was going to work hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't, I mean, they had to have a certain amount of relationships and connections. But I, first of all, I didn't want to get lost.
Sure.
In a big agency. And I just really wanted somebody who believed in me and would stick with me through thick and thin. Because
mm-hmm.
this industry is very volatile. You'll be working six episodes at once and then you won't work for a while. So I wanted somebody who believed in me no matter what was happening mm-hmm. in my career.
Well, so, okay. So that was, so you kind of started directing like 10 years ago-ish.
Yes. Like, yes.
Do exactly. you have any advice for people today in 2019 that want to get into directing TV?
Well, I shadowed 23 times total.
Right. And these are like big shows.
Yes. All big shows. Let's see. Well, I mentioned ER, West Wing, Gilmore Girls, Homeland.
And shadowing is like at least a week worth of time, right?
More. It's 7 days of prep, 7, 8, 9 days of shooting. And then if you're lucky, you get to go to post. For yeah.
So like a
days.
Month. And you did Pretty it 23 much. Times, which
and I
is
did
like 2 years
times. The thing about doing it on ER was because I was an actor and they all knew me, I got to do things that, or because I've shadowed so much, now I look back and go, oh, I thought that was shadowing. This is actually shadowing where, you know, they don't really know you. You're kind mm-hmm. of in the way.
You kind of have to ingratiate yourself a
yes.
little bit.
And
yeah.
you, everybody's looking at you like, what are you doing here? Who are you? And you're the only unpaid person on the set.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're just trying to learn and stay out of people's way. But on ER, they all knew me. So I could hang out with the camera department mm-hmm. and say, what size lens are you using? What is that called? What's this big thing called? Here, Lily, come look through the lens. Here's the difference. Here's a 35. Here's a 15. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they...
So is that something that you would not do as a shadow on a different show?
I mean, in the CBS program? No.
Like you couldn't stand, if you were just standing next to like an electrician, you can be like, oh, what's this light
you
called?
You could.
But you shouldn't.
I think you have to be judicious about what you ask. Pretty much you want to be a fly in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to get in people's way. You don't want to participate. I mean, the most successful shadow is the person that eventually somebody turns and looks at you and says, oh, I forgot you were here.
Oh my goodness.
But it's
That's
true.
Why I had such a bad experience shadowing.
Yeah.
But on ER, I got to do a little differently. I got to go to the sound mixer and say, you know, what do you, and of course they were my friends.
Right,
so they're like,
right.
Lily's asking me about my job. Let me tell her. And so they would, you know, like makeup would say, Lily, come here, look. We're building this new chest piece, you know, and so
makeup
right?
is probably insane.
Yeah, oh cool. my God. Here we got this bullet hole. Look, I cut this guy's arm off. Cool. Let me go see. So I got to like go to Foley. I got to do mm-hmm. lots of things that ordinarily mm-hmm. you wouldn't get to do. But in every case, pretty much in every case when I shadowed, I had asked a producer if I could do it, or I was part of a program. Because otherwise, you're just kind of in the way.
And now that you, so you did that episode in Nashville and things started to finally snowball, right? Now you're just directing like crazy. You've got tons of shows. What is your life like now? What's it like to be just like a working TV director?
I'm grateful every day. I'm still thrilled to be on a set working with actors. I'm still thrilled in prep, looking for locations. When you look for a location, you're not just looking for a place to shoot. You're looking for the story in the place that you're shooting. So is when you walk in, you're like, is this where the story happens? And then if you can see the story happening in this space, then you know this is the right location. I'm thrilled in post. As your audience knows, filmmaking is three separate films. There's your script, and then there's the one you shoot, and then there's the one you edit. And so when you get on the set, the actors have different ideas. You can't shoot it exactly as written because the door's so far away from where you want the action to be. So either you have to add more dialogue or you have to figure out a different way to do it. You know, the actual shooting of it becomes its own thing. And then when you're in editing, you have to make a film out of the footage you have. You can't go, well, in the script it said, it's like, nope, this is what you have. This is what you have to work with, which is why I love saying to the editor, tell me the story that you see from the footage that I gave you, mm-hmm. because that's the story that we're going to have to tell. We can't necessarily tell that story that was written. We'll be close. We'll be as close as we possibly can. But we have to tell this story. And sometimes what you don't realize is that the actors are saying dialogue that's like explaining what you're seeing. So it's like, okay, you know what? I think we can cut those lines mm-hmm. because we're seeing it. We don't have to have
here
the actors
we are podcasting
say
it. In Orange.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's awesome. And so are you, is the plan to stay in TV for a while?
I love TV. I think there's, first of all, I think there's huge opportunities for women that aren't necessarily afforded to us in film unless we're making our own films. I'm continuing to develop my own material. I want to make another film that I've written. But I'm also excited to try to direct films written by other people. So, you know, making films is a little longer process. So I always thought, well, I'll direct television at the same time that I'm developing film. It's sort of like what my career as an actor, I always thought, what I really want to do is a TV series during the day and theater at night. And I kind of accomplished that while I was doing ER. So it's sort of the same thing for me now, that my goal is, like last year, my goal was, it was the year of yes. I just wanted lots of experience. So I just said yes to everything, or 2 years ago. And then last year, I started getting pickier. And then this year, now that I've done The Terror, it's like, oh God, it was just artistically and creatively and personally, it was just such a wonderful experience that it's
you can't go back to right. something that's less fulfilling somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. That's sort of my aim now, is just trying to, which Leslie said to me, she said this last time we had lunch, she said, okay, Lily, now you have to be picky and it's going to be painful because you're going to have to say no to things. And, but she said, you know, you just really need to do things that speak to you and are, because it's, you know, directing is just so hard, not hard in terms of difficult to do, but hard in terms of it's exhausting. And so if you're going to expend that much creative and physical energy, it should be something that you really care about. And so that's sort of my criteria now, is I just really want to do pieces that I care about with people that I love.
Yeah, that's the dream.
Lily, you are living the dream.
I hope.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, we had an hour-long conversation about how you are living the dream. Oh, it's so awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah.
First question you asked me was, what am I doing?
Sure, yeah.
And I've got the Terror Infamies on tonight, but it'll be past but you it's episode 5. It's Shatter Like a Pearl.
Gotcha.
So they can look it up on the app, the AMC app, or Hulu or Amazon. And then I just finished MacGyver, which was a blast because I basically had to have 3 shot lists. I had the show itself, and then I've got this whole aerial thing with airplanes. So I had an aerial shot list, one whole day of a second unit going out and shooting airplanes in the air, and then a whole second unit of stunts. And then a whole second unit after I left of inserts, because we were going so fast I couldn't, you know, and MacGyver makes
you need bombs
out
stuff
of and, yeah, paper clips and stuff. Yeah. So that was a blast. And then I just finished NCIS Los Angeles, and I like to say LL Cool J follows me on Instagram.
Whoa. Wow.
Not to brag or anything.
Yeah.
You should. I hope you don't follow him, because
I'll put you in a power position. And again, this is a show I love, and I love those people. So I would go back and do that anytime. Then I'm going to go do my first Shonda Rhimes show, How to Get Away with Murder.
Exciting.
Oh, this is your first How to Get Away with Murder?
My first, and it's our last season, so I'm excited to get in before they go.
We had Allison Akel from that
on
the show, and she was great.
Great.
So what a treat. Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm really excited, and I, of course, I'm a huge Viola Davis fan. So.
Yeah.
Pretty and exciting. Then I'm doing a new show called Stumptown, which is based on
a billboard for it.
I know.
I love that graphic novel. I love
me
it.
Too. Wait, I just read them all.
Oh, there's a graphic novel? Because I was upset about the coffee, that they had taken the coffee name. But now you're saying this graphic novel existed before the show?
I do love
show?
The coffee, though. Yeah, that's my favorite cold brew.
Oh, it's man. Really
Stumptown.
Good.
Well, the book is great.
What?
Is Stumptown Portland?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, but we're shooting here.
Oh,
LA for Portland.
Oh, fun.
with Kobe Smulders, I'm excited.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like this cast. It's Michael Ealy, Cameron Manheim. It's just this Jake Johnson. It's this incredible cast.
Oh, cool.
And then I close out 2019 with Council of Dads, which is a new show on NBC based on a book. This guy found out he had terminal cancer, and he has this huge family of kids, and so he enlists his 3 best friends to help raise his kids after he dies.
Yeah.
And it's
it's a
tearjerker.
It's a tearjerker version of My Two Dads. Do you remember that show?
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was
4 3 men and a little lady.
Yeah, and 3 men and a baby. I guess is the prequel.
That's the first one.
The prequel, which I think was done first. So.
Yeah, yeah. Look who's talking. Okay, cool.
I love those movies. Look who's talking. I hate to admit it, but
they're so
pretty
funny.
Good. Yeah.
Oh, I love
Travolta, right?
Yeah,
Travolta. Christy Alley.
I feel like maybe John Hughes or Chris Columbus, somebody with some real credits behind them wrote those movies. I think.
Really?
Yeah, it might.
I'll wasn't it Bruce check. Willis?
Was it M. Night Shyamalan?
Yeah.
Yes, M. Night.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, thanks for talking to us. Do you mind sticking around for our unpaid endorsement section?
No, I would love to.
Unpaid endorsements.
So Rocket Stock is somehow I'm on their email list. They email me every day. But it's kind of like a Premium Beat or a Shutterstock. I actually think they work with Shutterstock. That they're making. You know, it's a stock footage company. But Rocket Stock makes really good stuff that you can kind of overlay over everything. So they have film grain and grunge and all that stuff.
Oh.
But they put out this new pack today that actually probably would work well for medical things. It's called Contagion. It's 175 plus microscopic biological VFX in 4K.
It's like bacteria growing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So it's, yeah, so they basically got this like a high powered telescope and got all these little, yeah, bacteria and insects and amoeba, I don't know, tiny things that are moving, and they just made a ton of footage. So like, let's say you are working on a short or a spec or a pilot or something, there's like medical science stuff in it, and you need
and
to...
somebody looks through a microscope and then you cut two.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Or even if you want to do some tree of life type stuff. But they have like all these different, you know, dust and particle. And there's a ton of companies that do it, but Rocketstock, they give away like 10 free ones of each of their collection, I think. Something like that. Light rays. Wow. And so I kind of like to go get kind of like, I'll always download all their free things and then I'll just put it on some footage and just
have it handy.
Post it somewhere. Yeah. Yeah, it's just fun to mess around with their stock stuff because it's kind of made to enhance the footage that you already have. So Rocketstock, I don't know. Check them out.
So mine, I'm going to double down on something I endorsed last season. Succession season 2 is so good. Are you guys watching that show?
Yes.
Oh man, I love it so much.
I have to catch up, but yeah, yes, I love it.
It's rough. Like this season isn't like... You know, there's some pretty brutal sequences, but yeah, I feel like the storytelling and the performances in that show are especially incredible this season. So Succession season 2 is releasing on HBO.
Mine's a little esoteric. Mine's a, when I'm directing, my last writer-producer, Jordana Lewis Jaffe on NCISLA asked me what book I was reading because I like to read. And I said, I can't read books while I'm in the middle of an episode or directing a film because I feel like I have to keep that story in my head. You know how when you're reading a book and you put it down and then you hold that story in your head till you pick it up again? Well, I can't do that and direct something at the same time because I feel like I need to just have this one story in my head all the time. But I can read the newspaper. I can read articles online. And I can read poems. Do I sound like a dork?
Cool. No, I love it. I love it.
Very so cool. I started reading this book. It's called Healing the Divide, Poems of Kindness and Connection, edited by James Cruz. And there's one poem that made me find this book. It's called Small Kindnesses by Danusha Lamaris. And that poem actually made me find this book. It just helps to like sort of like calm down at night or, you know, in the middle of the day when I'm just like my brain is just full of what I'm directing and just because I always find I need in the middle of the day anyway to just shut off.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of like unplug for a quick second.
Right.
Reset.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So smart.
So, so that helps me do that.
Healing the divide. No, that's really good.
Perfect.
I actually just heard another on a different podcast, Slate's Political Gabfest. They recommended like this anthology of short stories. And I was like, oh, I feel like I can do that. It'd be fun to read some short stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, something digestible is great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Lily, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Where can listeners find out more about you? Do you tweet? Do you Instagram? What's your favorite?
I tweet and I Instagram and I'm a dinosaur. I'm still on Facebook.
Oh, sure.
But
so are we.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's where I found you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's an active tool for us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, so it's just Lily Marier. I don't have a fancy...
Perfect. We'll have links to all the stuff that we talked about on the show on our show notes, including Lily's social media handles. You can find us at Just Shoot It Pod across all social, and me at Mr. Matt Enlow.
And I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram. And this episode was edited by John Luna. This episode was produced by Madeline Rosewatt, and our webmaster is Ewan Williams. And the music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazard. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.